Slightly past 1:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's a professor of sports business at the University of Ottawa, Dr. Norman O'Reilly. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, Drew. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Norman, we're going to start with there's an article in the Globe and Mail written by our good friend Sean Gordon. He was on this program last week, in which you're quoted in. And to paraphrase your quote, you say that the CBA negotiations are strictly a financial negotiation. Can you expand a bit on that concept?
Yeah, my view, and like you guys and Sean, I follow this very closely. And if you compare it to the last round of negotiations, and if you recall, there's a lot of other major issues on the table, things like less clutching and grabbing, making the game faster, making the game more entertaining. So there was kind of a give and a take. And then you know as well as I do, when there's a negotiation, you kind of have to have give and takes and things to go. And all of those things are calling minor issues. They're meeting on them separately. Sometimes Spear and Bettman aren't even there. This is really principally about dividing the increased revenues that the league has grown over the last few years. So that's my view is what the real important issue is, and I think most people would agree with that.
Norman, when you look at the NHL, there seems to be a clear divide. Well, there is a clear divide, really, between the teams that make a lot of money, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Montreal Canadiens, and then the teams like Phoenix that can't even find ownership without having some kind of guarantee that they won't lose money. How long can a business model like this survive?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time studying this kind of stuff, and as you can imagine, there's a lot of factors. I mean, principally, there's the type of owner. And we know there's some owners out there, or ownership syndicates, that are willing to run a team at a loss. There are owners who love their team. Think of Eugene Melnyk here in Ottawa, that are really not owning it for other business reasons other than they really like the sport. They don't want to lose money, and they want their franchise to grow in value. But, you know, some years they're definitely, if you believe Forbes, certainly they're definitely taking a loss. So there's that group out there. But there's also those that own teams for other reasons, and they own teams to be part of a larger sport business. Think of Maple Leaf Sport and Entertainment or the AEG Group in Los Angeles. And they own teams as part of a much larger business model that they're trying to achieve. So you've got all these different models happening. So within that, there's varying acceptances of profits and losses that different owners are trying to take. We've done some work with Anaheim, with the Ducks and their ownership group there. It's very much about Orange County, and they're willing each year to lose some money because they think the team's a good thing for their city. They have other business interests that are very successful, and they're able to do that. So it's really a model-by-model situation. Phoenix, of course, right now, to your point, is a very tricky one because there is no – the league essentially owns the team. There's Jameson and his group that are trying to take it over. But that's not an ideal situation in their mind. So that said, there's a whole bunch of models. You're very right. There's those teams that do exceptionally well because they've got local media markets and local markets like Toronto, Chicago, Detroit, New York, Montreal that generate a lot of revenues. Yourselves in Winnipeg, here in Ottawa, in Pittsburgh, and in markets like that, that's a lot more challenging. So it's a pretty complicated thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. Go ahead.
You know, everyone's following this, you know, and this is, you know, here, you know, if you want to say the media, the fans, you know, everyone that's following this CBA, you know, lockout, the owner's lockout and CBA negotiations, everyone's kind of expecting the core economic issue to involve, you know, the end result, the end game being, you know, the 50-50 split, which, you know, can be basically taken from, you know, the NFL or the NBA. You know, do you think that the NHL is looking at or should be looking at the NBA and or the NFL and trying to come to a resolution as far as this current CBA negotiation goes?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I would even argue that they're doing that. I think the NHL, if you compare the collective agreement, not the previous one, but two ago, the NHL was much more similar to Major League Baseball in its structure, and the Leafs and the Red Wings could spend double or triple what other teams could without much of an issue. They're very much moving towards an NFL model, and the NFL model, largely because of the popularity of the sport, but also because of the revenue sharing, has been very successful for almost all of the teams. I think the owners would like a financial situation like that. Of course, within that, as we know in hockey, owners are also competing against each other to try to win the Stanley Cup or the NFL. So they're copying these models, but also they're trying to grow the pie, so to speak, together, but they're also competing within that for talented players. And we saw that before the lockout started, there were some very, very large contracts signed, which kind of, you know, it kind of boggles your mind. But that's why, because in addition to growing the pie overall and growing the league, which they've been very successful at doing in the last 6 years, the league is doing as best it ever has from a business perspective. They're also competing against each other to win the Stanley Cup, get the most fans, get the most merchandise, etc.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dr. Norman O'Reilly, a professor in sports business at the University of Ottawa. Dr. O'Reilly, you mentioned Major League Baseball, and they do not have a salary cap. Of course, they have a luxury tax system where the wealthier teams can spend to their heart's content as long as they're willing to pay for it. Should the NHL be looking at a model more like that as opposed to the current salary cap structure?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of the hard cap and the soft cap, as we call them. And you're right, baseball has got this kind of soft cap. And only the Yankees and I think on one, maybe two occasions, the Red Sox have ever had to pay into that luxury tax. Mm-hmm. So it's really a pretty soft, with a capital S, cap, if you will. There's very rarely revenue being shared. And when it is, it's because the Yankees are spending enormously more than everybody else. The NHL was in a situation, it's previous to the previous lockout, where Toronto and Detroit in particular had salaries that were double, if not more than double, than other teams. And the league decided to work together and to put a salary cap in play, both a minimum cap and a maximum cap. So the gap now between the top and the lowest team is quite modest. So it's very hard to buy or sell a team and not be, it'd be way outside of the competitive framework. So they've gone to a competitive balance model. If you believe what the NFL's success and where the NBA has gone, that's been the model of choice in North America. The English Premier League has gone the other way. They're even more extreme than MLB. I think the experience would be not to go back there because, as we pointed out, the league has done really well. They got their best TV deal situation in the U.S. since Disney was involved and owned a team, so there's kind of another reason for that. Got by far the best sponsorship, so Bettman and his team have done an amazing job at generating large sponsorship revenues that have come in. And to me, those decisions are attributed to a growth in interest in the game. So what we've seen since the last lockout has been more, not hardcore fans. I mean, you and I that are hardcore fans, we're going to follow the game. They sit out for 4 years, we're still going to come back and watch. It's that further people out from the middle, we call it the circle of fandom, the people that have less attachment but have become attached. So they watch one Jets game a year in person. They may catch a couple on TV. Instead of buying something else, they buy their kids a Jets jersey for Christmas. That's who the league has started to reach. That's, the NFL does an amazing job at that far-reaching attachment to people that never actually attend a game or buy a ticket. So that's where your risk is when you get in these kind of situations of moving away from competitive balance, having a long-term lockout. And to me, that's where the risk lies if this lockout goes too long and if you went away from a competitive balance model.
You mentioned television and how it's really, it's the NHL is getting their best TV deal that they've had in years, especially in the United States. How much of an influence will television have on the NHL's business model in the future?
Right, I mean, let's say television in terms of including online streaming and however that's going to evolve in terms of that. So if we take all of that, so the consumption by a video screen or a screen of some sort to watch professionals, but that is clearly the future. And you look at where the NFL model is, and these models, they're down to, depends what you look at, and we can see the Green Bay Packers financials because they're a publicly traded organization, that their revenues coming from tickets are a very small proportion of their overall revenues. That's where the NHL wants to go, and they're starting to move that way, and that's obviously why there's this bigger pie that the two sides are negotiating over now. They're trying to go in that direction. So, yes, it's everything. The challenge then becomes the NFL has even acknowledged this is a bit of an issue for them, is they've done such an incredible job at making football a great product via screens and television and parties and da-da-da, all those things they've done every Sunday. The viewership is extraordinary. It's hard to keep convincing people to come sit in the seats at the game. And so you've got to still have that piece as a positive thing to a great environment. It looks good on television, a full stadium, a full arena, but the real future and how this grows. And the way I kind of capture it when I talk about this is to students and other people that are interested is think about yourself in Molson's chair or Gatorade's chair, and they're sponsoring the National Hockey League. They don't care. Well, they don't mind, but they're not about the 15 or 17 or 19,000 people sitting in the seats. they're interested in the 2.1 million who are watching Hockey Night in Canada, or the 1 million who are watching a game, a Leafs game on a Wednesday night on TSN. That's the audience they're interested in, because that's a much more, it's you know, exponentially larger, and that's who they want to reach to sell beer and Gatorade and whatever else the product might be for other sponsors. And that's where it grows. Remember, the media model, so the model for media is then based on advertising or subscriptions. And so TSN or Sportsnet or cable properties are interested in more viewers so they can A, sell advertising, B, keep the cable companies happy to keep them as part of subscription packages, because we all pay a chunk of dollars every month to be have TSN and Sportsnet and other channels on our package. So that's where the model is, and that's where all the money is. We've written a lot about this stuff, and so that's where they're trying to go. And I think both sides understand that. They're just trying to figure out how do we divide this growing share of revenue fairly.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 by Dr. Norman O'Reilly, a professor in sports business at the University of Ottawa.
When we look to the next TV deal, obviously the U.S. and NBC, there's been a deal of $200 million a year for the next 10 years, if this league ever gets back together. And obviously the pending new contract after, not this season, but the following season in the NHL in Canada. After that's taken place, so the $200 million we know is going to be annually for 10 years, and then the Canadian TV deal, say, for example, is also for 10 years, and including the digital rights like the American deal includes, how much room is there to grow after that point, and is that largely going to be on the shoulders of the paying public in terms of attending games?
Yeah, great question. And so if you think, you know, and obviously there's so many factors at play, but the first thing, When you look at kind of forecasting values, media values like that, you look at, okay, what are the competing properties that are out there? And so we've got NFL, MLB, NBA, you've got the CFL in Canada. You would look at what they're generating. And if you look at the other three leagues, and granted, their following is bigger. The NHL is the smallest of the four big leagues. The NHL has not generated their proportional revenue from media, and they're getting, as you point out, much, much better. Canada, obviously, it's the dominant property. So we're talking largely about the United States versus what the other properties are generating. And the whole regional sport network model, which is just exploding in the United States as a source of revenue and a source of viewership and a source of branding for all of the teams of all of the leagues, except the NFL, because they don't have a regional TV model. It's all national. But they're exploding in the U.S. Canada, we've got a different environment with the Sportsnet, the TSN, and CBC. That's probably going to shift in the future as the dollars get larger, the competition gets higher, and the teams, the smaller teams outside of Toronto and Montreal, want to have their own market. So that's going to change as well. So I think there's considerable room to grow. The other thing is, if you think about the consumer at the end of the day, and our ability to consume products on television, be they hockey, be they your favorite soap opera, your favorite television show, news, debate for the presidency, whatever you want to watch, you've got access to these things much more readily in a lot more different places, whether you're sitting in an airport, whether you're in the backseat of a car, whether you're at home, whether because it's the technology evolution, so you've got opportunities to get them a lot easier and in a lot better quality. And so there is, in my view, a significant room to continue to grow.
Norman, I think what you'd agree with, you know, is just as big of a problem as splitting up the hockey-related revenues, how to deal with all of these franchises that are losing money, and obviously that's a huge part of this. You know, how can the NHL solve this problem, you know, as far as the revenue share aspect goes? Do you think it needs to be more comprehensive?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's what they're kind of arguing about, and that's the thing that happens kind of behind the scenes. So first, I mean, there's a couple layers to your question. First is the when they're negotiating, they talk about the hockey and the non-hockey revenues. I know you've talked about a lot of that on your show. So there's the hockey and the non-hockey. So even though the 50, 47, 43, whatever the numbers are, when they're doing different proposals back and forth, they're playing around with what falls in each, right? So what percentage of... So the NFL is the most extreme. And if you want to go on, anyone that's watching it, just go on and get... You can find the Green Bay Packers financials because they're publicly available, because they're a city-owned team. You're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood, I can't remember the exact number this year, but getting close to $150 million each NFL team gets from sharing. So it's a total number divided by 32 teams. They each get that check. In the NHL, that proportion is small. You mentioned the NBC deal. That's a 1 over 30. So the money comes in, so expenses come off. It's shared amongst the 30 teams. So owners like that, particularly owners in smaller markets, It's guaranteed. It comes in. You can plan ahead of time based on it. It's money that it's all contractually sound in the future. So it's quite nice. The big market teams don't necessarily like that. So in the NFL, Dallas and New York would argue that, you know, we're losing money to help out Buffalo and Jacksonville and Cincinnati. Well, it'd be the same model in hockey, where Montreal and Toronto and New York would be helping out smaller clubs. So there's that kind of piece at play. We talk about revenue sharing, so it's kind of what's in and what's out. In the NFL, they include even visiting teams get a proportion, and they're sharing concessions, and they're sharing merchandising, and they're sharing everything. Almost everything that's possible is in there, except for some local generated revenues that teams have, so there's kind of a range afterwards, which keeps them very competitively balanced, keeps them tighter, keeps them makes them more open, more fair for all the teams. Now, within that, as we talked before, there are owners that are willing to spend and want to win. All right, so let's say, I mean, you've got in Winnipeg, you've got a extremely wealthy, the wealthiest owner in the league. Obviously, you've got a small market, the smallest market in professional sport in North America, other than Green Bay, I think. And so, but let's say he said, I'm willing to open up the bank. We want to win the Stanley Cup no matter what.
Right.
With a salary cap system, he can't do that. You start removing some of those things, then he could go do that if he wanted. Maybe great for you, not so great for other markets. So it's that kind of, you know, push and go that kind of goes back and forth. And so within that model, I'm guessing here, I have no idea, but behind the negotiation door, say, well, why don't they just get an arbitrator and split the difference in the $700 new million and we'll all have hockey and we'll all be happy? Well, it's because it's a more complicated discussion than that. They're talking about what's in and what's out.
Right.
And then you start to splinter the groups on both sides, right? Because what comes in and what comes out. So a great example that a lot of people talk about is you want to add some new thing to your stadium. So the owner is going to invest $7 million in a new, some low seating, right, to make the arena better. Or they're going to put in a new scoreboard. Or they're going to put in a new big screen outside that's $3 million. That money in some leagues and in some of the alternatives that are proposed would actually be considered revenue. So the owner would pay for it, would go into the team, and that revenue would have to be shared with the players. So the owners don't like that. The players would come back and say, well, you know what, actually, no, that screen would have never been built if we weren't on the ice, if we didn't have all these fans that wanted to follow us. We do have a rightful share to a chunk of that revenue. And so you can see that's not an easy issue to resolve. So that's how this becomes very complicated when you get into what additional things. And some owners would say yes, some would don't say no, some players would say yes, some would say no. They're working as unions, and you can see how it gets pretty complicated pretty fast.
So, Norman, what you're saying is basically there should be more accountants and actuaries in the room as opposed to so many lawyers.
Yeah, statistical geeks like me, right? But I would bet that they have teams of actuaries and mathematicians on their sides, and that people like me, that they would then pass it back to after each alternative comes in, and they work it out, and then they come back to that number. And so they're playing around, and not until either side starts to give, which hopefully we'll see soon, will we see a lot of movement, I'd suggest.
Dr. Norman O'Reilly, professor of sports business at the University of Ottawa, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, anytime.
Take care, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Dr. Norman O'Reilly, professor of sports business at the University of Ottawa. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight and all of next week, Tom Segura is in Winnipeg. They are sold out, both shows, already tonight, so you know he's popular. So be sure to get your tickets to see Tom next week at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, or any of the other great comedians they have coming into town. Give them a call, 204-488-4520.
Tell them Ezzy sent you.
That probably isn't going to help matters. Yesterday, Richard, we were speaking off air about how, you know, certain teams might be getting a benefit about this lockout. The Los Angeles Kings being the first one to come to mind, because there's the concept of the Stanley Cup hangover.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, first of all, do you put much weight into that concept as being truth? And second of all, so some of the other teams you think that might be getting a benefit, per se the Winnipeg Jets, because they'd be without Zach Bogosian right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the Jets without Zach Bogosian this year would have had significant trouble matching up the other team's best players. you know, we talked about it before. What do you do? Do you pair Bufflin with Enstrom, and then what are you left with on your second pairing, and how do you play that? I mean, where does Postma fit in? And you have Hainsey and you have Stewart, and, you know, all due respect to those guys. And you can't match up Klitsam. You can't match up any of those bottom four guys against anybody's top line. Never mind, really. I mean, you have trouble against a team's second line if they have depth in the second unit, you know, in second, big-time second centers like a Pittsburgh or a Philly or something like that. Or even in your own division against a Washington now with Ribeiro. So I think in terms of on ice, the Jets do benefit. Gives them a better chance. You mentioned the LA Kings, and the LA Kings are an interesting one just because Drew Doughty came on the record this week and said, you know what, it's probably helpful for us to get some time off. But history is limited in this regard in terms of teams that have come back after a lockout, and you looked really mainly to, if it's going to be a half season, you look to the New York Rangers. And the New York Rangers didn't benefit. In fact, if you recall, the New York Rangers in 95 didn't make the playoffs.
And then you had the Devils. Remember, they didn't make the playoffs in 95-96. Yeah. Remember, they got defeated by Ottawa. I think, Richie, everyone is going to have to deal in different ways with the half season. Let's go under the assumption that we're going to have a season this year, okay?
So I think
I would agree that the LA Kings probably wouldn't be as negatively affected as other teams by the lockout, and in fact, they would probably be positively affected. Right. You know, just like the Devils and some of the other teams that played into June and late May with the other two teams. But I think, you know, you have to look at some of the teams that would be that would benefit are the teams that have the injuries. Like, you know, you mentioned the Rangers. Gabrick was scheduled to be out. And I think if the season were to have started now, he'd still be out and probably would be back sometime November, December. So, I mean, you have to look at those guys. And sure, there's Bogosian on Winnipeg and there's Ryan Kessler on Vancouver. But, you know, just looking at it from not just the injury perspective, mm-hmm. but look at the teams in general who this would really affect things and maybe losing momentum or gaining momentum or how ready you have to look at how ready a team would be to have a short training camp and step right in. You look at the teams that have been successful the last few years, the Vancouvers and the Bostons, the Pittsburghs, those teams would probably be more ready for the lockout than other teams because they're a veteran group that basically, you want to start hockey? Okay, let's go. Let's get the season started. The teams that I would look at on the other flip side of the coin that would probably be negatively affected by the lockout would be a team like the St. Louis Blues, who did really well last mm-hmm. year and had a lot of momentum going, and even a team like the Colorado Avalanche or the Dallas Stars who were starting to gain momentum with the moves they've made. So you got to look at it like if you're a team that has some veterans and you were looking for a bounce back year, that the lockout isn't necessarily a bad thing. Again,
but I'm going to cut in for a second. What about, you know, length of season? You look at let's compare it to the NBA. You know, they came back for half season, but they played 66 games. A team like the Spurs and the Celtics, who people kind of both wrote off, went, I believe, both to the conference finals.
And are those not veteran teams?
Exactly. So maybe the professionalism of the veteran teams, the long rest they received, their coaches picking and choosing, maybe playing, you know, Greg Popovich not always playing them. You know, there were a couple of times.
Because they were playing three games in three nights.
One time they had to do that. So they'd sit them out and he'd rest them. But the actual chemistry issues, the professionalism, it kind of seemed to help the older teams.
There's no learning curve. They can't afford a learning curve.
Exactly.
So you have to hit the ground running. And those teams, obviously, you know everything there is to know about one another for the most part.
So a team that I think it hurts if you do a short season is a team like Edmonton, where you have a new coach, mm-hmm. even though he was the assistant coach in Ralph Kruger.
A new system.
I
agree with that.
Younger players.
Yep.
And all that. And really, in reality, younger players, you know, you say some of them would wear down coming from the CHL, maybe. But if they're, you know, 20, 21, and they've played a season or two like the Eberleys, then they should really be able to last longer because they're so young. So it goes both ways.
I think the Edmonton Oilers is an interesting point too, because, you know, I know Drew, you're saying we got to quickly go to break here, but I think there are going to be guys like Nugent Hopkins and, you know, Eberle Fine, the guys that are playing in the AHL, you know, that'll benefit. And we remember in 2004, 2005, we had, you know, Eric Staal and Mike Camilleri and all those guys that played in the AHL. You know, you're going to see that, but I'd have to agree with Richie. The younger teams, it's not going to help them at all when you have to, you know, get things going. And we're going to see a shortened training camp when and if the season does start, and a new coach exactly. So, I mean, it's really subjective as far as you want to say who it really affects and doesn't affect. It's not really based on anything aside from your own personal opinion. But I think you're going to see the veteran teams that are going to be able to step right back into the season when it starts and have, you know, probably an easier time than the younger teams, the up-and-coming teams.
Got to love that sack in the CFL. Got to love the defensive end, too. doesn't get blocked because of a blown assignment and then flexes after the sack.
Well, Bombers had the ball on the Calgary 5-yard line, and Joey Elliott with a bad interception in the Calgary end zone snuffs out a very promising opportunity for points.
So it's a good thing we're talking hockey and not at the game then,
yeah.
Drew.
Bombers down 12, but they're trying to stay in it at least. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One more hour to come on TSN 1290. Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. What was this, a fuzzy peach explosion?
As he just took the bag of fuzzy peaches, well, this sugar.
Yeah.
And then he poured it on my phone.
That can't be good for your phone. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve.
Richard, it's not going to damage your phone. That's what happens when you hit me off air.
Lay off me, I'm starving.
The website is
www.illegalcurve.com.
No, we're not doing the whole segment to this. I love listening
to this game.
Part of the Jets opener.
Before Jets games.
And we heard it how many times? It wasn't the opener. It was when the teams came on the ice for the warm-up.
Yeah.
We used to hear that song constantly.
What do they play for the opener again?
When they came on the ice?
Yeah.
It was No Money by Kings of Leon.
If you want to, Remus wrote a story about it for IllegalCurve.com about the music selections at the Winnipeg Jets games.
Remus, how are you doing today?
I thought it was Eminem and Nate Dogg.
I'd be better if I had some fuzzy peaches here.
Well, there's a bunch over on Richard's computer now.
How much real peach do you think is in a fuzzy peach?
It says there's real fruit juice. I don't believe that.
Story from the NCAA, and we're going to be joined in about half an hour time by our scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier, and he covers the NCAA very closely. Yep. He was at the UND USHL or US under 18 team game.
That's right. Richie and I were thinking about going to that game, but then
postponed.
You said it wasn't
game.
In the budget. We
what
asked
budget?
You for gas money.
Yeah.
You didn't give us our per diem.
I don't know what you're talking
about. The Illegal Curve per diem.
Yeah, how about that per diem? And there's another pick by Joey Elliott, again, stuffing out a promising drive for the Bombers.
Ridiculous.
Nick Cordelis, he's a freshman for the Wisconsin Badgers, a highly thought of freshman. He has been suspended by the NCAA for one full season. And the reason why he was suspended is more or less because he took a photo. Let me back up a second. In the NCAA, you're not allowed to have an agent. As soon as you sign with an agent, you give up your amateur status, and you're no longer eligible to play in the NCAA.
Wasn't there an issue with Chris Webber?
There's a lot of issues with Chris Webber back in the day, but that's a lot of that is improper contact with agents. It's certainly an issue. In Canadian junior hockey, you are allowed an agent. You're considered a professional.
Right. And some of these guys, by the way, have agents when they're 14. Connor McDavid, this prodigy. Some of them have agents when they're 14 years old.
If they know they're not going to go the U.S. college hockey route, you're wise to get an agent.
Yeah. Just so people know, these players who don't have agents have advisors, quote unquote.
You're allowed an advisor, but you're not allowed an agent. A picture was taken by Ian Pulver. He's a player agent. He was on this program once or twice?
Once,
I think. He's been on this program. It's a picture taken from the NHL Scouting Combine. So this is going back a number of months now. It features Nick Cordelis. It features
Galchenyuk.
Yep. And it features somebody else. I'm not 100% sure who it is. Igor Larionov is in there because...
Was Alyonka Larionov in there too?
She wasn't, but I think she may have tweeted it also or something. Or it was on her Facebook account. Pardon me. It was on Alyonka Larionov's Facebook account.
Of course,
it's a picture of them at the combine posing and holding some sort of energy drink. The NCAA, in their infinite wisdom, has determined that by holding this energy drink, it's as if he was advertising for this energy drink company, and as a result, he has violated his amateur status and was suspended for 1 year by the NCAA and is ineligible to play for the Wisconsin Badgers this year in the college hockey program.
I'm not sure if you mentioned this, Drew, or maybe you were just about to mention before I rudely interrupted you. But there's an appeal coming up on October 18th. This, to me,
seems like
something that this guy's going to get an appeal because, as far as I'm concerned, they have to prove that he's signed an agreement or he's done something, he's sought out, player representation. Because as far as I'm concerned, to link holding an energy drink, to me, I don't know what you guys think about this, but to me, it seems like they've taken a big, giant leap here. From a guy holding an energy drink hanging out with a bunch of hockey players to...
Because the NCAA is moral high ground.
Well, look, the NCAA is certainly a joke of an organization in many of their decisions that they make, and they tend to be very hypocritical as they make millions and billions of dollars on the back of college athletes without paying them a penny.
Drew, the other thing you got to mention here is this guy also has junior rights with the Kelowna Rockets, so he can go play in the WHL.
Well, exactly right. He may now consider leaving college hockey. His rights are owned by the Kelowna Rockets of the WHL, and he could very well, if his appeal is rejected, and the suspension is a year and is reinforced as that, he could very well up and leave the Wisconsin Badgers, a place where he obviously would prefer to play.
Coach Mike Eves, they're very, very well respected.
Yep. Yeah, Patrick Eves' dad.
Yeah, one of the best college hockey organizations, and he could go play for the Kelowna Rockets and give up the rest of his amateur eligibility and be considered a professional. And what a boon that would be for the Kelowna Rockets, of course. But the real point of the segment is more so to discuss the hypocrisy,
right,
and the ridiculousness of the NCAA for punishing this kid for simply being involved in a picture taken by a player agent who 100% should have known better.
Yes, that's right. If there's money, if he was paid for this,
which we don't
know, whether or not you agree or not, agree with the rules or not, it is the rule.
If he was paid by that energy company, then I don't have a problem with the NCAA.
If he wasn't, then I have an issue with this decision.
I think the NCAA is a big problem on that.
And without evidence, aside from just this picture, and Remus, you can try and tweet the picture on our Twitter page @IllegalCurve. Without the evidence of that, of an actual payment or an exchange of dollars or an exchange of product for advertising,
being in a picture for something. I mean, what is drinking a Coke then some advertising for that picture?
Based on the NCAA's interpretation, I would have to say yes, it is. I mean, what's the difference? And I'm looking at the picture right now.
I haven't looked through the NCAA's bylaws, but NCAA's to me is again, you. What you have there is an organization that you talk. For example, look at the NCAA football coaches. I mean, it's not a matter of who's doing it and who's committing the violations. It's a matter of who's getting caught.
That's a good point.
It's kind of like the steroids thing.
That's a good point.
So, look at the NFL. You're going to tell me, in good faith, that only two guys a year are doing steroids in the NFL?
No, obviously not.
So, who gets caught?
Two guys who are stupid enough to get caught. That's it.
Well, maybe that's what happens here.
I'm a cynic when it comes to college sports because simply there's too much money.
It's hard not to be.
Yeah, there's too much money hanging around. Right. Honestly, I believe the NCAA each and every year decides what organization, what school are they going to take down? Because you can, right. I mean, for the most part, if you dug hard enough, I think you'd be able to find violations in each and every program.
I agree completely.
Each and every good program in the NCAA.
Exactly.
And that's across all sports.
And if you're going to set a precedent by, not doing your due diligence and not, fully investigating the matter, and then it comes up to bite you, and then what you're doing is you're opening up a whole nother can of worms with players or recruits, potentially being violation by, being caught in a picture or just being out with the guy. Or I mean, the reality is there should be more clear-cut rules for this. If the guy was endorsing a product, he was being paid to endorse a product, or he was, I mean, that's the issue here, not whether or not he happens to be with other players who are represented by Ian Pulver. And again, the facts have to still come out. This appeal is going to be interesting. We'll have to make sure we follow up on this because to me it looks like, he wasn't really given a fair shake here. And again, we'll wait to see what happens with this appeal. But it seems a little bit presumptuous and a little bit sketchy, to be honest with you, that they're suspending him for a full year. I think this guy's going to go to the WHL regardless, by the way.
Well, if he's suspended, I would think he would, simply because,
But I think even if they don't, I think if he wins the appeal, I still think he'll go to the WHL.
Why is that?
Just the way the NCAA has treated him, and again, I don't know him personally or followed his career much. I think he's a Anaheim Ducks draft pick.
Yes.
But I mean, he played last year, but I don't know. I mean, it seems like it seems like something doesn't add up here.
Yeah, the picture here, I'm looking at it right now, is posted by Ian Pulver. It says, @BioSteelSports, @NHL Combine, @Nick Cardillas is on Twitter.
I think he's since then shut down his account.
Yeah, at Galley94. So that's good.
Probably for legal reasons.
And the Yak. And then it says at Igor Larionov and at Dan Tolinsky. Dan Tolinsky actually used to be a blogger, and then he got hired by Pulver's agency firm to kind of do PR for them and do a bunch of other things. So that's the mess that they got themselves into, and you know, I guess we need further information, which we don't yet have. Well, whether or not he actually violated the rules, whether or not they're ridiculous, you know, it's hard. If the rules are in place, if they are ridiculous, whatever they may be, and they can prove that he actually did violate them, then he violated them. And to be honest, the NCAA as a whole is a organization that I think has many flaws in it. But at the same time, I mean, he has options.
Yeah,
he can go to a WHL.
He could go USHL if he wanted to do that.
Before going to college. That's generally what they do before going to college. He could go to the WHL. He could play overseas even. He could do other things. So if you're going to choose that, then you better not violate the rules. So I'm reading an article here, actually. This is by, I guess, a Wisconsin blogger, because he was going to Wisconsin, so they obviously have an interest in what happens to him, and says, it's certainly not an NCAA violation to be at the dinner, but the student athlete would be required to pay for his own meal. It's not against the rules. See, that's how extreme it gets.
You can't
have somebody pay you for your dinner.
Yeah, you can't. It's not against free anything. Really.
It's ridiculous. It's not against the rules for a student athlete to associate with an advisor as long as the player doesn't receive any special benefits. The student athlete is also required to compensate the advisor for any services provided. Even if Cardillas did get a free meal, a 1-year suspension is that's a little bit more intense.
An agent can't work for a player for free, and then assuming there's a quid pro quo later on that player will then sign with that agent. It has to be if he's going to have an advisor and not an agent. If he's going to have an advisor while in college,
got to pay him.
He has to pay him, but he can't be an agent. So I mean, and the way they split hairs is somewhat interesting.
It's crazy. Some speculated that a dinner from an agent would be a 3 or 4 game suspension, and the picture itself. This article says on the fifth quarter here, Bucky's fifth quarter, that it wouldn't. Picture itself wouldn't necessarily result in a suspension. So
yeah, you can find out more information at buckysfifthquarter.com, but that'll be with the lack of NHL hockey.
Well,
you
Drew,
can
you'd
follow
be,
that.
You'd be a great advisor because you don't buy anybody dinner.
Not you guys.
Drew brought me a nip at a Bombers game once. It's like 3 years ago.
I think that's because you stole the nip, and it was the only way I could prevent you from getting in trouble.
Yeah, you had to buy a little kid a nip because I stole his.
Bail you out, exactly. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shortly before 20 after 2, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to get to NHL news and notes in a minute or two, but we have an etiquette question
comments.
Yeah, we're obviously we've sort of been keeping our listeners abreast of what's going on in the Bomber game.
This is the opener song, Remus.
This is a song that Jets would come out to. So when's puck supposed to drop? Like 45 minutes?
Yeah, but like,
I don't remember the song.
They need to change this. This can't be the song.
I like Kings
this
of Leon.
This was the opener.
What do you mean by the opener?
Like the song they play when they come on the ice.
When they come on the ice. It's
like
so loud.
At the start of the game?
Yeah, but Remus, neither of us were ever, never heard it because we were always eating the buffet.
That's true.
It was so loud you could never hear it, but this was it.
You can blast it more, but this song's kind of...
It doesn't inspire me.
Yeah. Remus and I really enjoyed when they had with taco night. Remember? They had tacos. That was the best night of my life.
So, PVR etiquette.
Yeah.
You know, we have a
PVR?
Listener.
I have a VCR.
We have an angry tweet.
We have an angry tweet from a listener who is listening to us, which we very much appreciate.
Yeah, of course.
And he's PVRing the Bomber game for...
First of all, come on.
we might want to stop that at any point in time.
Yes.
I mean, they are 4-10.
Let's bring on Mr. Etiquette here, Michael Remus. He's the PVR etiquette guy. He gave us a little bit of a lesson between the commercial, between the segments and the commercial break there. Michael, why don't you take the floor?
Someone who's PVR'd sports, and I vowed to stop this practice. I mean, you've always had the time where you're at a hockey game, and there's an important game after. So rule number one about leaving a public place while you're PVRing a game.
So like you're playing hockey, and then you want to go home and catch the rest of whatever game.
Don't talk to anyone. If someone's trying to talk to you, walk away immediately. Just run, book out of there. Two, don't check your phone. Someone's obviously trying to text you. You're going to be tempted to go on Twitter or something to check it out. Rule number three, when you're driving home, listen to a CD. Don't put on the radio. Don't listen to any FM station or any AM station, because you know some DJ out there,
like Drew,
is going to ruin the game for you, and then you're going to be really mad at him, even though you really like his program.
That's right.
And so, and this is why I've stopped PBRing sports. I taped the Super Bowl Pats.
How were you missing a Super Bowl? What were
I
you
taped
doing?
The Super Bowl with Ezzy.
Where were you that you guys were missing?
Yeah, we did.
Super Bowl.
Did.
Steelers. But you came. We were coaching Steelers Cards.
Oh, there was a hockey game that night.
I was coaching hockey that night, and I actually taped it and left. I actually got to watch the whole game. Crazy ending. Never
Steelers won that year, right?
We even ordered pizza that night. Yeah. Had taped the game, so we ordered pizza in the middle of halftime of the taped version.
Yeah.
The pizza guy came. He said to the pizza guy, "Hey, I don't want to know anything about this game, pizza." Pizza guy.
Yeah.
He's very nice.
Did you call him Pizza?
No, I don't know what his name was. He had a name. I forget it.
Well, somehow, a Winnipeg Minor Hockey Association loves scheduling games during
it's
the Super
amazing.
Bowl.
Amazing, yeah.
I can't tell you how many games I've had to miss because of that.
I'm a Niners fan. I'm in 1994. I missed the Niners-Chargers Super Bowl because I had a game at Graham Park. Can you believe that?
The whole issue, and I know this guy, we thank this guy, for our listener, for listening to the show. Hold on, we won't throw him under
his
the
handle?
Bus.
No, no.
I believe his name is Neil. His handle is... @NErickson159.
Okay, so we appreciate you listening to the show, but this is the thing with the PVR, and you know, I know people PVR sports, but first off, I'm a big guy. You got to watch the game live. But the thing that I was going to say to Remus's point is, what are other people out there supposed to do when there's a game on? Bombers are a big deal in Winnipeg. You can't blame someone if they by accident tell you the score. It's not like they know that you PVR'd the game.
I just feel like I got to take all precautions not to have it ruined.
It's the impetus of the...
Yeah, but if you listen to Illegal Curve, you know that Drew and I are Bomber season ticket holders. So, you know, we apologize, but we're just doing our job.
NHL news and notes.
Really, it's the... You know, this is the saddest part about the lockout. Dominik Hasek has officially retired from professional hockey.
Did that happen 10 years ago?
Yeah, after he was
retired about 5 times.
After
now.
He wasn't able to, you know, find any interest in having him return to the NHL as a goaltender.
Do you think...
a goaltending coach, as you point out, a goaltender.
Do you think it had anything to do with Rich Winter, his agent, I believe based out of Edmonton, originally asking teams for a... Two-year contract?
Yeah, I mean, you know, shoot for the moon, why don't you, Rich?
Sure.
He's only about 48.
Yeah, no, he is. 47, 48.
Yeah, and, you know, minimum two-year deal. I would have signed him 3, personally.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Dominik Hasek hasn't really been relevant since the
George W. Bush years?
Since the Osgood took over for him in the Nashville series in, like, 2007, was it, when the Red Wings last won the Cup, and that was it.
Yeah, and, I mean, he was just... At the later points in his career,
was
just so
it was 07.
Temperamental.
It was 07? Yeah, it was 07.
He was so
unpredictable. Because then it was Pittsburgh in 08.
And he was so temperamental, but you could just, you just couldn't trust him.
Right.
Right, and again, you know, good for Hasek for, you know, carving out a little career in Europe there towards, you know, but I mean, his NHL career has been over for a long time.
So you just go quietly into the night.
I think the thing here, you know, about, you know, we all knew that he wasn't getting an NHL contract. You know, the thing you got to think about now is how good of a career he has and how he impacted the sport. He was a fantastic goaltender, arguably top 3. Some people might call him the best goalie of all time. But I think everybody here knows that Marty Brodeur is my number one goaltender.
You know,
of all time.
I've said this on the show before. In one season, I mean, in watching a game, he was the best I've ever seen.
Yep,
you were
dominant.
Completely psyched out by him, and you didn't think you were going to score a goal at all. But over the course of when reviewing a player and taking a look at a player's entire career, I don't think Dominik Hasek is in the same ballpark as a Patrick
Waugh. Short sample size, though, was incredible. The 6 Vesnas in such
it's
a short period
incredible.
Of time.
Best goal I ever saw, but not best career I've seen.
Right.
It was just sort of Terrell Davis-like in that it was just too short of the time span, you think?
Yeah. Or Rocket Ismail in the CFL.
Yeah.
You know, remember Hasek stoning in Canada in 98 Olympics?
Yeah, do you remember the shooters, Remus?
We've done this on this program.
We've done the program.
Before.
Do you want to hear the Shanahan goal? Should we play it?
Let's do it.
Has got to bag this one. He's the 5th. He's got to score. That's all. No. He cannot do it.
Bob Cole is easily the greatest announcer of all time.
Drew, can we get Bob Cole on the show?
Yes,
next week.
That's
tried.
Yeah, I've tried him before.
What about, he'd probably do one for me.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
I'll email him.
Speaking of goaltenders.
There's no way Bob uses email.
Ilya Bryzgalov, genius.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's actually Dr. Ilya
Bryzgalov. Universe.
thinks that some Russian players may now return to the National Hockey League when the lockout finally ends.
Well, I'll tell you who's hoping Ilya Bryzgalov doesn't return.
The Philadelphia
Ed Snyder.
Ed Snyder, yeah. You know, Drew, there might be some truth to that. I'm not sure.
How did they get out? Richie, you know, I was going to ask you this question off air, but it's a good question for people listening. How do you get out of a contract?
Well,
he signed a nine-year contract.
Look at Radulov. He just left, and they suspended him, and didn't play.
There's so much money on the table, though.
No, I mean, that's the thing. He won't because he wants the money, but, I mean, some players that maybe are signed for one more year.
Ovechkin, he signed for a decade.
No, I realize, Vezzy, but say a 1 or 2 year contract, or a 1 year contract, for example, a guy like Ponikarovsky, in theory, not that's going to happen with him, but he signs for 1 year. Halfway through the year, he's settled in with his family. They're already there. There's only 2 or 3 more months left. He's getting paid a nice salary. Maybe he doesn't come back. And that's the kind of guy I'm assuming he's discussing. And I wouldn't be shocked to see a couple guys, but no more than a couple.
Yeah.
Guys who really have NHL prospects at this point in time, or guys who are just playing out bits of their career?
Well, I mean, they're still playing the NHL, Drew, so I think I would say probably the latter more than the former, but I wouldn't be shocked.
There's going to be, Richie's right, there's going to be a few guys. I mean, come on. Ovechkin's under contract. How many millions of dollars does Ilya Kovalchuk have left on his deal? You think he's going to leave $90 million on the table with the Devils? No way. So, I mean, it should be said that, you know, the KHL has gotten better, and I think some other Russian guys that are, let's say, not Tier 1 prospects would maybe choose to sign in Russia as opposed to maybe trying it out in the AHL. But as far as these established guys like Ovechkin, Kovalchuk, Bryzgalov, I think this is all, you know what it is, Drew? It's almost cementing the players' unity and almost giving them more. I think it's less to do about them, you know, wanting to play in Russia than them saying, like, you know, oh, NHL, you better end this lockout or we're going to stay here in Russia, because I think it's take it with a grain of salt again.
I think so.
And I know you like to take your omelet with a grain of pepper.
Pepper, yeah. I don't use salt. I'm not a salt guy at all. We'll wrap up news and notes with this. According to the head coach of the Dynamo Minsk, Evander Kane is in bad shape. And he's not ready to play on the KHL level.
Let me tell you something. I talked to Hustler about this on Monday. I was on the warm-up show.
We heard.
I hope you guys listened. We talked about this. You know who's in bad shape? I'm in bad shape. Evander Kane is not in bad shape. As far as this story goes, I think this is complete baloney. I think, you know, they were upset that he wasn't...
Speaking of which, you're eating baloney at the moment. So
also
yes.
True.
Yeah, spam, actually. Evander Kane is the fastest guy on the Jets. He won the fastest skate, one of the fastest guys in the NHL. I heard the story. I'm like, are you talking about the same Evander Kane that I'm used to?
I don't think those issues are necessarily mutually exclusive. I think that he comes in and
they expect him to score 3 goals every night.
I mean, I don't know why the KHL coach has any incentive to call him out unless he actually is out of shape. And would he be out of shape considering that nobody really thought there'd be a season? He wasn't signed throughout the offseason. I know we heard he was training. I'm sure he's in good shape, but
well, the definition
he was
of
doing
shape,
CrossFit.
I think, is the issue. You know, is he maybe he doesn't have his hockey endurance up to the level?
Not. Maybe not.
You know, I'm look,
maybe
he's,
some guys.
I'm
do.
Sure he doesn't have any sort of pot belly the size of the pot bellies we have in this room.
Sure,
but I mean, his endurance and his, you know, lung capacity may not be what it, you know, at peak NHL condition or something along.
Drew,
those
I'd like
lines.
To call it horizontally challenged.
That's pot belly is
as opposed to pot belly. It hurts me a little bit.
I wasn't talking about you.
You. You said in this room. And by the way, Michael Remus is a very svelte individual.
We have to be honest here also. I mean, are these guys going over there to get a little money and keep in somewhat good shape and keep themselves busy? Or are they taking it really seriously? Do they know what the KHL trophy is? Do they know how much it's valued as to maybe the Russian players? Probably not. And they're probably just going over there to make some cash and keep busy. Some of them. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, some of them are obviously going over there and competing at the highest level. Some of them are probably having a little bit of a skate. And maybe he's one of them having a skate. I mean, it's not, from what we heard, from what we can gather around here, I mean, doesn't actually endear himself to too many people. I mean, this guy is...
Seems to have made
a lot of enemies.
I don't need him to endear himself to me. I need him when he's with the Jets. I need him to play like a dominant hockey player.
But if you're a teammate, you'd like him to endear himself to you.
You know, we've seen a lot of teams in sports that succeed despite the fact that they're, you know, 20 guys, 20 cabs, that sort of thing.
It's funny, Richie. I don't think Drew's endeared himself to us.
Yeah, I know. You're still around, Drew.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Open Gangnam Style. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Dance Party.
Gangnam Style.
You're listening to TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Legal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our scouting correspondent. He's down in Grand Forks. He was there last night for the UND game. Kyle Kozier, welcome back to the program. How are you doing, KK?
Hey, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm curious to see when Ezra's going to go over to South Korea to see his long-lost brother and do a brotherly Gangnam style dance.
Well, you know what, Kyle? It might be for the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyongyang. We'll do NHL participation in the Winter Olympics Gangnam style.
It sounds great to me. I'm really excited for that.
KK, we spoke about it a couple segments ago, and that's the Nick Cordiales. First of all, how does he pronounce his last name?
Well, I've heard Cordiales and I've heard Cordiales. You know, just be a lot of fluctuation there in terms of who you ask. The one I hear the most is just sort of a flat Cordiales.
Okay, well,
that's one I've been going with, but I'm open to interpretation there.
Then we'll go with that. You know, sort of a. Obviously an awkward situation. He's suspended for the entire year pending appeal. You know,
yeah.
Is this a case of the NCAA just being, you know, typically heavy-handed, or do you think there's more to the story?
Well, there's sort of two different trains of thought. One is, you know, there's sort of is divided into two camps. One is, you know, wondering why the NCAA has come down, you know, so strictly on an issue that on the surface sort of appeals to stem from a couple of different photos posted to Twitter, you know, one over a dinner two different stories there, too. Either a dinner with different Palmer Sports clients at the draft or at the combine, and then a picture of Cordiales holding essentially an energy drink called BioSteel at the same event. So if that is the case, it does seem like a bit of a heavy-handed punishment for a couple of, pretty innocuous type of photos, especially when you hear that, you know, Cordiales paid for his own dinner as is sort of the custom there. However, there's also, you know, the other camp thing is there's actually a little bit more to the story in terms of what the advisors were doing for Cordiales. Now, what I think may be happening is they sort of have expanded upon what what an advisor is allowed to do. That's sort of the speculation. Obviously, I can't say for sure, but certainly an interesting situation that it kind of highlights some of the pitfalls that younger players can fall into when sort of navigating the waters in terms of furthering their hockey career.
How hard is it, Kyle, you know, this distinction of advisor as opposed to agent? And, it's you know, if Pulver is advising him, Pulver obviously is an agent, you know, for other players, for example, in the CHL. How fine a line is that to cross or not cross?
You know, if you want to, you know, get down to the nitty-gritty of it, it seems like a pretty fine line. But the reality of it is that it's very, very murky, you know, as to where things start and stop. Essentially for kids that are college-bound, the NCAA rules, you know, say you can have a family advisor. You have to pay that advisor, a reasonable sum, you know, a reasonable yearly sum to, you know, provide advice to, you know, to the player and the family. But again, you know, the word advisor is sort of used almost as a shield there, too, because, you know, if you're talking to young players, they will reference, oh, my agent. Mm-hmm. They're not meaning to actually suggest they have, you know, an agent, but because the words almost are used interchangeably, that line is so murky there. And I think that sort of boils down to the people working as agents and advisors, too. There's certainly a lot of really good guys that are out there doing everything above board, but there are a lot of people sort of purporting to be quote-unquote family advisors, too, who sometimes really don't have the kids' best interests at heart, and that reasonable yearly sum in some cases can run into, you know, a few $1,000s, which is, you know, sort of way out of the scope there. So it's really a tough field to navigate, which is why, be nice if the kids really didn't need it, but it sort of got to the point now where trying to decide where to go to school and where to play hockey, you almost kind of needed someone in your corner.
Kyle, we wanted to do, getting off the Cordiales story a little bit here, we wanted to do, an NCAA hockey preview with you. And, Drew mentioned that you were at the University of North Dakota game yesterday. It was an exhibition game. Their season hasn't started yet, but other teams' seasons have started. And obviously, Jacob Trouba has, you know, got off to a good start with the University of Michigan. Who do you like this year? I know a lot of people are picking the University of Minnesota to win. They've got Nick Bjugstad, who is a top prospect in the Florida Panthers system. Who do you think is going to, you know, take it this year?
Well, obviously the Gophers are sort of the very early favorite now. You know, they lost a couple guys last year, but basically they're essentially returning for the most part most of their firepower. You know, you mentioned Bjugstad, they got Kyle Rouse coming back, Eric Howlis coming back. They're bringing in a couple really highly regarded guys from the BCHL and Mike and Connor Riley, Brady Shea's coming in there. So really, they're extremely deep, with no glaring holes except in net. You know, they're bringing in his name is Adam Wilcox. He's comes out of USHL, expected to carry most of the load. You know, they lost Kent Patterson as a graduating senior, so that's sort of the question mark there. The thought is that they essentially have so much firepower that the goaltending is not going to matter a whole lot. But you know, that it's easy to say when it's on paper, but you know, when push comes to shove, that's something that you know you actually have to play the games and see how that works out too. So of course, UND is all obviously again pretty highly regarded. Again, you know, two new goaltenders there. They have a transfer from Alabama, Huntsville, and Clark Saunders. They have a Bruins prospect, Zane Gothberg, is there. Now, those two guys split the game last night, and both of them looked pretty solid. The development team, obviously, is, you know, much younger guys, and but they put up four goals on, you know, between the two guys, but they still look pretty solid. Again, you touched on Michigan. It's supposed to be pretty good. You never really count. You know, discount Boston College. So it's really, for the most part, it's sort of the bigger names up there. A lot of the preseason polls have some teams that did well last year. You know, Western Michigan is on there, Ferris State, Union. Not a lot of guys on those teams, you know, not a lot of, I guess, household names or even names recognizable to, you know, casual hockey fans, but they're all well-coached and hardworking teams too. So, but yeah, you just can't put a lot of stock in the preseason polls because it's really just trying to decide on paper who's going to be good. So that's why I got to play the season.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by our scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier. He's down in Grand Forks where he watched UND play the United States National Development Program, under-18 National Development Program last night. Kyle, the top line for UND is Rocco Grimaldi, Danny Christo, and Corbin Knight. Last night they combined for 8 points and they had a +8 plus-minus rating. You know, talk about that line. You know, and of the three players, is there one guy in particular who really makes that line go?
Well, I tell you, there it's really kind of a fun line to watch because, you know, it didn't really matter what situation they were playing in. They really just made it look like a power play. You know, they moved the puck extremely well. They can, you know, beat you off the rush. They can beat you off the cycle. Just kind of, you know, you name it, they'll find a way to beat you. Really a nice balance to the line as well. Grimaldi's obviously sort of the smaller guy, kind of the water bug, but is extremely skilled and extremely skilled with the puck. One thing I noticed is he sees the ice, you know, very well. Like, as soon as he gets the puck, it's off the stick, and he knows where he's going with it. In terms of who's really driving the line, I kind of have to point to Danny Christo. He's kind of elevated this game, I guess. When he came there as a freshman and even as a sophomore, though, that he was sort of a perimeter guy. He could still score and was quite fast, but looks like he's bulked up and looks, you know, a lot stronger now. He's you know, actively driving the puck to the net and making things happen. You can really tell he's been working on the shot too, because he beat Thatcher Demko right over the shoulder from the top of the circle with just a laser of a wrist shot too. So I'd say he's kind of the guy that drives the bus there. That said, they all sort of complement each other reasonably well. But I look for him to have a really big season this year.
Kyle, Christo is a Habs prospect, correct?
He is, yeah.
Now
the other two are Panthers guys.
If there hadn't been, if there isn't a lockout, if there wasn't a lockout and it continues to be a lockout, Christo, would he have possibly made the Habs squad, or would it have been a year in the AHL, or what do you think would have happened?
To tell you the truth, I think he could use a little bit of time in the AHL. Again, it looks like he's filled out and bulked up a little bit, but it's always nice to kind of adjust to playing with that added bulk and weight. So in that sense, I think making the jump right from the NCAA to the NHL might have been a little tough, and just sort of learning how to play with the new body in the American League probably would have been the best thing for him. You know, that said, I happened to talk to one of the Canadian scouts at the intermission. He was very, very happy with his progress and has really kind of I just think the quick form seems to realize what he has to do to get to the next level, and sort of, I don't say stop relying on the skill, but realizes he has to do a little bit more than just focus on his natural talents and has to put the work in too, and really kind of happy with his progress at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's, you know, in the National Hockey League in a couple of years, but I still think that time in the American League is going to be important for him.
Yeah, we saw him last year. I saw him a couple of times, saw him play three times last year. Stood out as one of the maybe the best forward on the team, especially with all the injuries they had last year.
Yeah.
The under 18 team that you mentioned saw last night, any players there that stood out for you?
You know, the big guy on the team is obviously supposed to be Hudson Fashing. He's a forward actually from the, you know, Twin Cities area. Big kid, about 6'2 or 6'3, and fairly heavy as well. Kind of had a quiet night. Didn't stand out like you'd expect, like a potential first round NHL pick to do so. You know, that said, these are younger kids playing against some guys, you know, in some cases 4, 5, 6 years older than them. Frank Petrano's on the team kind of stood up for me as well. And another, you know, some more of a local product, Keaton Thompson, who's actually from Devil's Lake, the defenseman. I think right now is a B-rated prospect on Central Scouting's list. Kind of a nice player, too. Does a lot of things fairly well. But really, I was impressed with how he moved the puck. Has really sort of carried his game over to the development team to the higher level and doing quite well. I remember seeing him, I think it was an eighth or ninth grader playing on the Devil's Lake High School team, believe it or not, and was clearly the best player on the ice at a very young age, and he's, you know, has elevated his game to play with the big boys here. So those three guys, I guess, stood out for me.
Kyle, I might be mistaken here, but I think there's 6 first-rounders from the 2012 draft playing in the WCHA, NCAA. In addition to Trouba, you've got Zemgus Girgensons on Buffalo, Providence's Mark Jankowski, Boston College's Michael Matheson, Jordan Schmaltz, who's at UND, and then you've got Brady Skye in Minnesota. Out of those 6 guys, you know, Trouba included, you know, what guy do you think is going to surprise most people?
Well, I guess I have to go with Jankowski, and the only reason I say that, you know, he put up a couple goals last night. They had a big win over Sacred Heart. I think they beat him 8-2, if I remember right. And just because he's a bit of an unknown, I think he has the potential to, either show he's, you know, really a real prospect, or maybe, you know, slide back and kind of, you know, solidify his position as sort of a maybe type of guy, but. Because he's, you know, comes out of Stansted College in Quebec, which is, you know, a lot of people were, you know, obviously at the draft looking through their books to figure out where he came from. So I think that given his upside and his potential to really open people's eyes, I'd say he's the guy that is likely to surprise the most.
Kyle Kozier, Illegal Curve scouting correspondent, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Kyle. We'll see you soon, bud.
Thanks a lot, Kyle.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Did you play this already?
Yeah, that's okay. You played it again.
No. Come on. This is Jets game pregame warm-up song.
We should only play Levels and Gangnam Style.
This is a level. Different one.
Oh. 2 years. We've been almost been on this radio station, and it astounds me each and every day.
We've been doing this show for almost 4 years. That's 3.5 years.
Yeah, 4 years in February.
Yeah.
Touchdown Winnipeg Blue.
And I cherish every day.
This game is very similar to the meaningless to the BC game to start the season when they had meaningless touchdown at the end.
Hey, it's window dressing. You can't go wrong with window dressing.
I think I just saw Tim Bonner's sister on the screen.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire to wrap up the show this Saturday. RJ Umberger.
Yes.
Sort of unique. A lot of players are going to play in Europe, or they're playing in the Continental Hockey League, or the
Central
Hockey League.
Or don't forget about the Tier 2 German League.
Or the Tier 2 German Leagues, or they're playing for the Alaska Aces. RJ Umberger is going to his alma mater, Ohio State, and helping out the Ohio State men's hockey team. Of all the, you know, what's your thoughts on RJ Umberger deciding to go coach as opposed to play in a league somewhere?
I like it. I mean, I'm not so sure, Drew, if your angle is that he's taking jobs away from if he goes overseas, or just more so what he's doing.
I didn't really have an angle. I just thought it was unique.
Drew, that he's on an angle.
He's the only guy that you've heard of that's actually doing something.
No, Ken Hitchcock, actually, I read this morning, is teaching coaching clinics to coaches in the St. Louis area.
Well, at least
something
he's a
like
coach,
that,
though.
Giving back to places that he'd been, giving back to other areas, I think it's a good thing.
Is this a good sign, you think, for like a future? It obviously seems that he's got a future interest
he's
in
an Ohio State guy, as you just mentioned. Yeah. He's in Columbus. I mean, he is the poster boy for hockey in that area, and for him to give back and continue to put a good workmanlike effort, and considering the fact that the organization's been very poorly run, is, I think, a testament to his character.
Yeah, I think it's good that we're seeing players doing this. And, you know, again, I mean, he wants to coach, and this is obviously going to help him, pardon me, after his NHL career is over, because I believe he's in his early 30s, so he's probably already starting to think about that a little bit. But yeah, this is good. I mean, not there's only about 120, 130 of the 750 NHL players that are overseas. Mm-hmm. So these guys have to do something.
That's right.
Are you not directly a rapid fire question, but are you surprised the number of players are going to play in these really sort of what I would describe as random leagues, like the Central Hockey League?
I mentioned it before. They're just kind of going over there and playing and having fun and making a bit of cash. And
how much cash could you possibly make playing in the Central Hockey League?
I think they're picking areas they want to see and live in and experience, Drew, frankly. I don't think it's a money issue necessarily.
And I don't think it could be a money issue. Scott Gomez played for the Alaska Aces, too. So some of these
guys. And it's funny because it came full circle, because now he's playing at the Alaska Aces level.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's very
clever.
Still
love Scotty Gomez.
You know, there's no NHL hockey to talk about, but there's enough that we can talk about junior hockey, and there's going to be an NHL draft at some point in time someday, and our good friend Craig Button, who does a great job for TSN in covering the draft, is starting to, you know, write some articles about the draft, and the two names we've been hearing are Nathan MacKinnon and Seth Jones. But there's some other guys who are out there who are performing well. Alexander Barkov is one of them. He's overseas.
Yep. In the Finnish League.
Yeah, in the Finnish League. Connor McDavid is playing for the Erie Otters of the OHL.
Connor McDavid, I think, isn't eligible till next year, though, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Well,
not the 2013 draft, but the 14 draft, or is he eligible? I thought he was eligible. He wasn't eligible until the 14 draft.
He's 2.5 years away from being eligible for the
15
NHL draft. Pardon me, yeah.
So, but I asked Corey Pronman, but I haven't seen Alex. How would I have seen him play? It's in the Finnish Elite League. Everyone's talking about Alexander Barkov, and Craig Button wrote about him, but he didn't really give a detailed analysis. What Corey Pronman said is that he hasn't ever seen a guy dominate the Finnish League like that before, and apparently he's not the fastest guy, but he's extremely talented guy. So, you know, this draft is already looking like you've got three really good players.
We've seen Seth Jones play here in Winnipeg, and he was the best player on the ice, bar none. I didn't think it was a question about it. And then Nathan MacKinnon, from what we can see on TV, looks like as good as you're going to get. So if Barkov is in that class or close to it, then you have a big-time draft, and maybe you'll have some teams thinking, maybe we want to trade some guys at the deadline to give ourselves a shot in that lottery.
Well, my question is, you know, given all the hype around Seth Jones and Nathan MacKinnon, can you see any situation where those two guys aren't picked 1-2?
Sure. I mean, remember, Drew, back in the years ago, Phil Kessel was the number one pick 2 years before, then the number one pick year before, and he was starting to slowly fade, and then he ended up being number five. So, yeah, I can see a situation where he can pop in there, but I would think that it'd be... the percentage would be probably about 15, though. It wouldn't be a high percentage, because Jones and MacKinnon are basically sure things. So he's got to essentially be a sure thing to pop in there.
As we've documented on this show before, David Booth of the Vancouver Canucks is an avid hunter.
That's true.
We have?
He's tweeted pictures where he's killed a bear, an elk, and just a couple days ago he tweeted a picture of him hunting, a mountain goat.
Interesting.
What does mountain goat taste like? Is it gamey?
I don't know. But he tweets, in addition to showing the picture, there's only one trophy in the world that's harder to get than this.
Stanley Cup?
What is David Booth going to be hunting next?
I had a pony.
I hope he it's funny, Reem. I hope that he doesn't hunt pony. I don't know who hunts pony. I'm not sure. I mean, it seems like he's done all the good things, the deer, the elk. I'm not sure. I've never hunted before. Drew, I mean, I know that you like to go out there and hunt and all that, but I don't really know what else there is to hunt. Maybe some birds or something? I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of available geese,
yes.
In the area in Winnipeg. If he was here, he'd probably be shooting those left, right, and center.
Right, a lot of geese.
Not that I'm defending that at all.
Where do you go to shoot geese? Maybe we can get somebody to tweet at us and tell us that, but I've never fired a firearm.
If only David Booth could get back his scoring touch as well as he hunts.
That would be helpful for the Vancouver Canucks.
Owen Nolan's a big hunter, too.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
As he's got, as he's waving, he wants it.
Well, I'm going to cheer the NRA. No, I'm just kidding. Remus didn't like that one. No, it didn't crack
Remus
a smile.
Didn't get it.
I only try to make Remus laugh. I'm going to cheer the fact that it's possible that the World Cup of Hockey is going to come back. I'm a big fan of the World Cup of Hockey, and the fact that it's on the table for the NHL, the NHLPA, Hockey Canada, IIHF is good. And I think having the World Cup of Hockey every 4 years is a good thing.
Bombers just recovered a Calgary fumble with a minute 20 to go, and they're down by a touchdown in the two-point conversion.
Well, Andre, what if people are PVRing the game?
We already discussed that.
Always good to see a team with seven turnovers be only down by eight.
Yeah.
That says more about Calgary than Winnipeg. My cheer, Drew, this week is going to go to Bud Lynch, just recently passed away. He was the play-by-play man for the Detroit Red Wings for many years and then became the public address announcer for the Red Wings. I don't think honor history enough, and he's one of the historic voices of hockey, and certainly will be missed in that area. So give him a cheer this week.
And I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Brett McLean. He played five games for the Winnipeg Jets last season, and we remember he was playing just out skate, and he had a very scary cardiac arrest incident. His professional career is now over as a result, but he's turned a negative into a positive. He's made contact with his local Heart and Stroke Foundation and is now involved in doing some awareness for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. So I'll cheer Brett McLean for taking definitely a negative, spinning it into a positive, and hopefully impacting lives in a positive sense throughout, I guess, the greater Toronto area.
Never turned out to the NHL player. Obviously, his career was cut short, but terrific AHL scorer and scored before that. So
yeah, and I'm sure it was, and he was a small part of the Winnipeg Jets 2.0 last
home
season.
Opener.
Yeah, home opener. You can never take that away from him.
Yep.
That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, our scouting correspondent Kyle Kozier, Scott Burnside of ESPN.com, and Professor Norman O'Reilly, a sports business professor at the University of Ottawa. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. Another turnover for the Bombers. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website featuring your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.